If you had to remember just one saying of Jesus, one saying of Jesus that springs to your mind, which would that saying be? Okay, I can only pick one. If you're within sort of, less than shouting range of someone, just swap and see if we've got any of the same ones. One saying of Jesus. Well, okay, I guess those of you who can remember the whole of the Sermon on the Mount, you don't need to go through it all. One thing, some people's minds go totally blank, don't they, when you get asked a question like that, and I think, oh, I must know one of them somewhere. And so I know of a university lecturer who asked that question of the class in front of him. He's in the States, but he's got, I imagine he must have a sprinkling of believers, but loads of unbelievers there. You know what comes up as easily the saying of Jesus that is most remembered? Love your enemies. Love your enemies. He says that again and again and again. That's the one that comes back. Well, that's where we are this morning. So if you take hold of a Bible and turn to Luke chapter 6, Nick is going to come and read to us.
The reading is Luke chapter 6, starting at verse 27 and reading to verse 36. But I tell you who hear me, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who ill-treat you. If someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, do not stop him from taking your tunic. Give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, do not demand it back. Do to others as you would have them do to you. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners, expecting to be repaid in full. But love your enemies, do good to them, and lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful.
Well, thanks a lot, Nick. And the winner is... Yeah, you've seen the programmes. Well, I know we don't admit we have, but someone's probably seen the moment on, Britain Has Got Talent or Strictly Come Dancing, Skating, Get Me Out of Here or whatever. You rather hope that when kind of Jesus got to that moment, he didn't do the cruel bit where the camera has to pan round everyone before you announce who the winner is. But if you look back to the top of the previous column, you'll see Jesus has just chosen his 12. They're apostles, not finalists. But the next job, of course, is training them. Team Jesus is formed. And then you'll notice that crowds come gathering round. They're gathering around him in their hundreds and the thousands, and it's time to have people who will be trained for the team. And the question that really comes to mind, you see, is, look, if these are chosen as his apostles, his disciples, I mean, how do you spot a disciple in a crowd? It's not that instantly easy, is it? I mean, you can go to Oxford Circus and you'll see the crowds, all right, and I've no doubt there'll be a disciple or two mingled amongst them. Now, how do you spot the disciple in a crowd? What does it look like to be a member of Team Jesus? Or, put it a slightly cruder way, how are you a chip off the old block? We sort of speak like that, don't we, when we think that... we see a parent's likeness in a child. Well, as Jesus begins to teach about loving your enemies, people who show that astonishingly generous love, he's saying, in effect, look, yep, those are the ones who show the characteristic of their Heavenly Father. Look down to the end of that section Nick's just read for us. Look at verse 35. But love your enemies, do good to them, lend to them without expecting to get anything back. Then your reward will be great and you will be sons of the Most High. You will be heirs, inheritors of the Most High. Chips off the old block. Why? Because he is kind to the ungrateful and wicked. And you're showing the family likeness. Be merciful, just as your Father is merciful. Well, what does this love look like? You see, again, it can just be a phrase, can't it? Love your enemies. Yeah, we know he says that. Now, but just look at it more closely. It is more, for example, than grin and bear it love. Look how he begins in verse 27. I tell you, who hear me, love your enemies. I mean, there's a contrast that Jesus is explaining between what others say and what I tell you. Yes, you may have heard it said, love your neighbor. Though actually even that is rather more stretching than many people imagine when Jesus comes to teach about it. But I say to you, love your enemies. A contrast between what others do and what I tell you. Now, how do you spot a true disciple in the crowd? Well, look at how they handle opposition. Hatred, exclusion, insult, rejection. Because that'll come the way of the disciple. Look just back to the bottom of the previous column. Woe to you when all men speak well of you. That's not the sign that you're a follower of Christ. It's actually a sign of a false prophet. That everyone's speaking well of you. So, love your enemies. Do good to those who hate you. It's more than just have a stiff upper lip, isn't it? He's not calling on us to be British, but to be Christian. There's more than grin and bear it. Well, you know, we've all got to face it, so, you know, just don't lash out and stick with it, gritted teeth. Now he says, do good to those who hate you. Not just don't harm them. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who ill-treat you. You ever been there? Ill-treating would be far too strong a word for what went on. But I can remember in college a staff member who rubbed many of us up the wrong way, who didn't seem to be a friend of the gospel, though he claimed to be. And these things, you know, take ages to lodge into my brain. I was well over halfway through my time at college before I actually began to pray for him. It changed my attitude, changed my heart. I still thought he was wrong. I still thought it needed saying he was wrong. But how I thought of him, how I acted towards him, now that changed radically. It's very hard to pray for someone and still be bitter about them. See, as Jesus says this, I don't know if any of you have sort of prayer lists, people you pray for. Actually, this may be suggesting that there are one or two extra names that should be added to it. You know, you sometimes hear people saying, well, I'm going to take you off my prayer list. Well, Jesus says, if you feel like that about them, you should be adding them to it. Wonder if your mind is already running around the office and thinking of a colleague who, the last person I pray for, he ought to be on my list, she ought to be there, or the family member. If someone strikes you on one cheek, and I don't think he's got Rocky 6 or whatever number Rocky is up to these days in mind. This is more of the sort of ritual slap, the insult, even the charge of heretic. Well, don't hit back. Turn to him the other also. It's almost more attitude than action. But do you remember Jesus at his trial? They really did slap him on the cheek. And his crucifixion, and as they nail him to the cross, Father, forgive them. They know not what they're doing. He doesn't just teach it, he lives it. Always forgive your enemies, someone said. Nothing infuriates them more. Yet, if they think they're quoting Jesus, they've missed the point completely, haven't they? You see, the love that Jesus looks for is not point scoring or revenge taking. Do to others what you'd have them do to you. You see how positive he is. It isn't don't do to others what you don't want them to do to me. No, no, it's do to others what you'd have them do for you. How do you spot a disciple in a crowd? Well, not by the way they grin and bear it, but by the way they love their enemies. Here's something else about this love. It's more than grin and bear it love. It's more than tit for tat love. Before I was converted, I'm probably sort of see it more black and white than it actually was, but there was certainly truth in this. I got kind of people divided into different groupings in my mind. I mean, there were the folk I just liked and enjoyed being with. They were great. And then there's another group. There wasn't the same chemistry between us, but I needed them from time to time. You know, they were practical. Anyone who's practical, I need from time to time. I'm so impractical. That was always helpful. Or they could help me with all the academic stuff that I didn't really know where I was going on. Then there was the group that I neither sort of particularly liked nor were particularly useful, and they were in another group as well. It wasn't that I showed no love before I was a Christian and then I suddenly became wonderfully loving. I wasn't without love as long as you fell into the right category. Or you were in the category I needed at the right time. What I discovered about God's mercy is that it's not selective. Nor must the disciples be. That's the painful thing at times about being Christian. But it's what marks out the true disciple. He or she shows love across the board. It isn't just the loving act, the good deed, the generous gesture that marks out the disciple. Even sinners do those. See how he picks it up in verse 32? If you love those who love you, that's my first group, you know, the nice, we all get on well. What credit is that to you? Even sinners love those who love them. If you do good to those who are good to you, what credit is that to you? Even sinners do that. And if you lend to those from whom you expect repayment, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners expecting to be repaid in full. No, no. The thing that marks the disciple out is the love that crosses the boundaries. You rub my back, I'll rub yours. Look, everyone plays that game. Have you thought what it is that makes cliques? I mean, we all know cliques, don't we? Almost every grouping has cliques. Happens in clubs and offices and churches. It's not that you've got a friendship group. We've all got those, hopefully. You know, people that you know better than others, people you get on with, well, there is the chemistry there, people you share some preferences with. There's nothing wrong with a friendship group, and that's not what makes a clique. What makes a clique is when you won't step out of your friendship group. Or you won't let anyone else in to the group. When I reserve my love and my generosity for that group alone. And Jesus says, love your enemies. I can't live in cliques and do that. I can't actually live just where I'm comfortable and do that. For some of us, these are very painful words. Yeah, the child who's known an abusive love. The parent who feels scarred and battered and betrayed, maybe by a child. The working man or woman whose colleague makes every day you go into work an ordeal. Or just the person who's got one of those neighbors who would drive anyone up the wall with their petty demands. How do you spot a true disciple in a crowd? Love? No, no, no. If you just love those who love you, what credit's that to you? No, you spot a true disciple in a crowd, not by love, but by love for your enemies. It's more than tit for tat love. It's more than grin and bear it love. It's more than tit for tat love. It's more than common sense love. My mum was a great one for common sense. I mean, that's really all you needed to make the world go round, as far as she was concerned. And a lot of the time she was right. She was Yorkshire born and bred. She had sort of down-to-earth Yorkshire common sense, as she would do it. You know, it's obvious, dear, just use your common sense. And most of the time it was very good, solid, earthy wisdom, and occasionally it was just her traditions brought into play. I can remember at school, I don't know if you ever had one of those schools where school rules, you know, the school rule is always use your common sense, which I remember thinking was really rather an unfair one, because it just allowed the teachers to make up the rules as they went along and attribute it to common sense. You know, you didn't quite know where you stood on it. On the other hand, there are times, aren't there, when we all say, yeah, we're for common sense. You sort of feel them. If MPs had just used a little common sense when it came to expenses, we wouldn't be having the trouble we're having now. I'm meaning the ones who did it in all innocence, just doing what everyone else was doing. Yeah, where's the common sense, we ask? Well, yeah, there is plenty of common sense in Christianity, if you like, but there's a great danger if we begin with our common sense that we just fit the Bible into... what's our common sense? And it can get in the way. See, read a verse like, verse 29. You know, if someone strikes you on one cheek, turn to him the other also. If someone takes your cloak, don't stop him from taking your tunic. And the person who's full of common sense is immediately asking, am I meant to take this literally? I mean, give an inch and some people will take a mile, give them a yard, who knows what they'll take? You know, is that how a parent's to treat their child, a teacher's to treat their pupil? If I'm beaten up, have I got to not defend myself? Or what about verse 30? You know, give to everyone who asks you, and if anyone takes what belongs to you, don't demand it back. I mean, do I have to give to every beggar whatever they ask? Am I really expected to run my business this way? You know, common sense is instantly wanting to know the answer to all those questions. And I want to say to them, no. Take it like that and you'll miss the point of what Jesus is saying. He's not calling for gullibility. It's love he asks for. Love disciplines a child. Yeah, just before you relax, do make sure it's love that's disciplining them. Because those of us who are parents know how easily it can be piqued pride or just angry resentment. Now, love may well turn down the beggar's demand for money for very good reasons about what it's about to be spent on. But we make sure that it's love that does it, not love of possessions. My possessions. Make sure it's love, not stinginess, with either my time or my pennies, which stop me truly caring. I want to say to the common sense person, no. If you talk like that, you'll actually miss the point of what Jesus says, because he speaks of more than common sense love. Look at verse 35. Love your enemies. Do good to them without expecting to get anything back. Common sense draws the line before there. The love, you see, that prides itself on never having been taken in by a beggar. The teacher who says, no child's ever got away with anything in my class. You want to ask sometimes... have they ever experienced grace from you? The beggar, the student? True disciples show this extravagant love. It's the opposite of tight-fisted penny-pinching. It's not like an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. It's extraordinary generosity. And we can't afford to go to the poor and deprived, whether that's materially, socially, emotionally, spiritually, the poor and deprived of this city with mere common sense love. Now, how do you spot the true disciple? Yeah, it is love, but it's more than grin and bear it love. It's more than tit for tat love. It's more than common sense love. It's actually ready to lose out love. Do you realize that the cloak that's given in verse 29 was the one item that was your inalienable right in Old Testament law? I mean, don't look it up, but this is Exodus 22 and verse 26. If you take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, return it to him by sunset, because his cloak is the only covering he has for his body. What else will he sleep in? You've got all kinds of rights as a if you've got a debtor, but if you take their cloak, you must give it back. And here, what does Jesus say about this love? If someone takes your cloak, don't stop him from taking your tunic. I forfeit what I have a right to, love. That's a sign that you're a chip off the old block. Like father, like son. Because the son, you remember what was said of him? While we were still enemies, he died for us. He didn't covet equality with God, a thing to be grasped, but he emptied himself and became a nobody. A slave, he took on the form of human nature and humbled himself even to death on a cross. Want to talk about common sense love? No, it doesn't cover it. Ready to lose out love is what marks out Team Jesus. But I tell you, love your enemies. And as we draw to a close today, two questions for you either to think over, talk over when it comes to coffee, sandwiches, whatever. One's the who question. Who might you add to your prayer list? You probably want to keep that to yourself, especially if it's the person you're talking to. Second is the what question. What would it look like for me to love my enemies? Let me leave you with those. Thanks for listening.